This is a lecture by L. Ron Hubbard, given on the 21st of September, 1965. The title of this lecture is OutTech. This tape is 87 minutes long. Reproduced by Golden Era Productions.
They probably won't applaud so loud when they hear the kind of lecture I'm about to give you. You know, mean. This is what date? 21st of September. Isn't that awfully significant in some way? What happened on the 21st of September? Fall or something? All right. I gave a lecture on it. I guess that's what's significant. Well, you see, I've reformed. I've reformed, and I've decided to lecture to you once in a while. But truth of the matter is, there's so many lectures on tape, you see, it's rather like gilding it all and putting an unnecessary coat of paint on it and that sort of thing, you see. But the truth of the matter is, what's happening at this particular moment is we're in the eagle's eye view position. Do you see? An eagle's eye view. That is, we're way up at the top of the gradation chart, looking back down the lines. Now, that's a very optimum position to be in because you can see at once what's necessary and what's unnecessary. You can take a look at this and you can say, well, that stuff over there, that just went into a slight diversion, don't you see? And this material over here, well, that was not too important. That datum right there, though, boy, that's right straight through. That's important. So you see. So that when you're taking an eagle's eye view of the situation, you can select importances of data. Now, the one thing that the poor bloke down at the bottom of the line, along about HAS, he's got an entirely different attitude. He's got an entirely different attitude. He's in a sea of data. And this sea of data is overwhelmingly and overpoweringly general. Every drop of water in the ocean has the same importance of every drop of water in the ocean. He's unable to differentiate between one drop and another. He's in this sad state, then, of drowning. Actually, he doesn't start his drowning in Scientology. He starts his drowning in life. And that is much more general than Scientology at its early stages. Scientology at least tells you Scientology is important. But life is liable to tell you life is unimportant and life is important almost in the same breath. In other words, did you ever hear anybody say, well, life is unimportant? It doesn't matter. And so forth. And then they say, well, life is very important and earnest. You know, next breath. And then they say, you should revere your parents. What's wrong with you is you revered your parents. Okay. Now, the trouble with you is Mr. Jones is sex. Haven't had enough. And when you get all through, you feel pretty groggy. You start going through school, for instance, when you pick up a body, you get into kindergarten and so forth. Every teacher tells you that every datum in every part of the subject is very important. And not only that, but each teacher tells you that only that subject is important, really. And when you get all through, you've been told so much is important that you generally just go on a retreat from the whole thing. And the hardest thing that Satan has to do, and the most significant thing he can recover across the boards, is his ability to evaluate importances. What's important and what isn't. Now, processing. The basic scheme of processing, what is it? The duplicated question. The examination of the mind for the apparent answer to the question. The knocking out, then, of this, that, and the other thing until the individual can take a look at it and see before him some data that is important. Do you understand? You mustn't underestimate the value of the administration of processing as an entirely separate thing than what is processed. In Scientology, we have developed the repetitive process which permits the individual to examine his mind and environment and out of it select the unimportances and importances. Now, yes, additionally, he knocks out of re-stimulation, he does a little erasure, he gets things out of his road, he clarifies his view, he can see better. Oh, yes, all of those things, too. But remember that all he's basically doing is taking a look at the situation and finding out what is important and what isn't important. But to do that, he has to find out what is and what isn't. That is even more fundamental. So in all of the processing, as you come up the line, you are following, in actual fact, a duplicative system of questioning, which is in itself new, strange, and totally unique to Scientology, which makes the other things work. Other things work because of this. You see? So it comes back in its original stages to the auditor. Now, yes, an individual can listen to a few tapes, he can read a few bulletins, read a few books. Yes, he'll get a great clarification of various things, because all the time what's happening is I'm presenting him with certain vistas of existence and conditions of existence, and he's examining them, and he's taking them in or knocking them out and handling it and reorienting himself. Don't you see? Now, as he does this, he, however, is straightening up his own mind. And his real gain when the chips are all the way down largely depends upon the auditor. And the auditor is very, very important. Now, the individual who is drowning in a sea of life receives a repetitive question from an auditor. The PC's statements on it are handled and as is. And those statements are then acknowledged by the auditor, making a full cycle of the situation. Only then can get up to a point of where he himself might, all by himself, confront his own mind. He's got his own mind and life so mixed up that man has completely forgotten what a mind was all about, and in large numbers, the majority of cases, isn't even aware of the fact he has a mind. He thinks the mind is himself. He's made the same mistake that the religionist makes. And the religionist has a ball. He talks about, you must save your soul. How you are going to save your soul, I'm not sure. See, because your soul happens to be you. But it would be too self-centered and egotistical for you to go out on an all-out crush of saving you, wouldn't it? So we have to divide this out so that it is save your soul. And where is your soul? Well, my soul is over there, some peedy-weedy will tell you. Yes, I am over there. Oh, I know I'm exteriorized now. I am over there by the radiator. Now, how can an individual be over there by the radiator? Well, he can't be over there by the radiator. Because if he were exteriorized, he'd be, I'm over here by the radiator. You see that? So what is all this now? It means that the important gang, these all look important to you as you go up the line. They all look important to you. But the big ones actually are not at the top. The big ones are getting started. And you get some of the most startling gains from some fellow who walks in off the street and he starts to orient himself just by the fact that Scientology exists, that there is a body of knowledge that leads somewhere, that there is a road out. He starts orienting himself, he gets tremendous gain. Now, under expert handling by an auditor, using a duplicate question, he is able to look at life and his own mind and himself and his circumstances and so forth, and he's able to come up with additional gains. And we've got tremendous numbers of things that can happen to this individual on improvement, because it's a long ladder. It isn't a short ladder. Of course, we live in a society which rather demands the individual that he takes a 22-gauge needle and receives it in the gluteus maximus with just one shot, and at that moment goes, hooey, I'm clear. See? Society has originated. All you've got to do is eat one bowl of Wheaties and you are Superman. Well, I'm afraid you have to work for it. It isn't that Scientology is slow, it's that man has gone so far down. To dig him out at all is pretty heroic. And the first step in making him come up the line is, of course, making him aware of the fact that such a thing as Scientology exists. This alone will give him a start. But he actually makes his real first gains on becoming aware that there is a road out, because he's sure there is none. He's heard that before. He's been told that all he had to do was eat a bowl of Wheaties, and he was Superman, you see. And he ate bowls and bowls of Wheaties, and he's still not Superman. So what's the dependency here? A basic dependency is upon your course supervisor, the person who is teaching Scientology. Well, that's a basic dependency. There's slightly prior dependency. That's the fellow who disseminates Scientology. He's doing something for the society all like that, just like that. Even though you get somebody up into arguing, of, is it or is it not, he's better off than not being aware of it at all. So you get the disseminator of Scientology, you get the teacher of Scientology, as in an introductory lectures in early classes, that sort of thing. These people are performing a tremendously important function. And it's a function that you, knowing the gains that can be achieved from auditing itself, are prone to overlook. If you present this acceptably, and if you teach it so that it reaches in its early stages, you will find the people right in front of your face are experiencing remarkable recoveries up along the road. These things you don't ordinarily see because they're not on an e-meter. They're not being categorized as an individual. But I'll give you an example. I took a rather raw crew of students one time, and I did nothing but lecture to them. Nothing but lecture to them at all, and got some of the best graph changes I have ever seen in an ACC. They didn't receive any auditing for 6 weeks at all. No auditing at all. They just had lectures. Now, some individual hears about Scientology, and having heard about it, that there is a road out, hope resurges. He thinks, well, maybe I'm not totally licked. Well, that is something like finding a straw in the middle of a vast ocean of nowhere. Something exists. Now, the suppressive counters this, of course, by saying it doesn't exist, and it isn't any good, and it isn't that, because all the suppressive is saying, boy, the last thing in the world I want to have happen to you is if you get any better. Because if you got any better, you would then get stronger, and I'm having a hard enough time murdering you now. So, therefore, the person who begins with the dissemination of it, he reaches people, he's giving them the straw in the very tumultuous ocean, something to grip onto. Then the fellow who tells them about it, who teaches them, why, he gets another upward movement. And then it comes into the hands of the auditor. Now, in the auditor, it's in very sure hands, because there's ways to audit and ways not to audit. And there's ways to do a good job on a PC and ways not to. And the big upsurging gains that the individual makes that can be marked on a chart and so forth are, of course, found in auditing sessions. But remember that if the disseminator and the teacher did not do their job first, that person never gets in to the chair of the auditor. So the biggest mistake you can make is not to disseminate Scientology and to teach it in an unacceptable fashion. Those are big steps that can be very badly mucked. Now, when you reach into a society at large and try to get some common denominators that you can get people to agree with and walk on forward with and so forth, you're talking to very confused and very distracted people, so that you actually could have many approaches and probably many answers as to how to do it. One of the soundest of those answers is to speak to them about communication and teach them simply, one, that Scientology does exist, that he has got some friends somewhere in the world, that there is somebody interested in what happens to him. This is all part of the message that Scientology exists. And then your next line that you throw to him and so on is that there is some value in being able to communicate. You're teaching the datum, really, that if he could communicate to his environment better, he could handle it better. Now, that's dicey, because some fellows know that if you communicate, you will be punished. Do you understand? So you're selling across that line that he's afraid to communicate, and you tell him, well, it's all right, and he eventually does get the idea that if he could just communicate a bit better, he could handle his life better. Now, of course, that is one of the horribly obvious truisms that you, as an auditor, are so familiar with that you forget that this is a new, strange, and startling datum to the man in the street. That if an alarm clock is rolling off the table, if you stopped the alarm clock from rolling off the table, it would be better than letting it drop on the floor. And therefore, when you reach over and stop the alarm clock from falling off the table, you are then handling your environment. But if you don't know enough to reach over and stop the alarm clock from falling off the table, you are not handling your environment. You get the idea. Well, he agrees with this. Of course, he says, well, that's silly. And you say, well, now, he said, if you talk to your wife about the situation, it probably would straighten up better. Now, that's getting adventurous. And he looks that over. So you fix it up on the basis, well, now, he might be rather upset at first, but it had come out better in the long run. And nervously he tries to communicate to somebody, and he has some wins and he has some loses, and gradually it moves into his perimeter that there is some truth in this, that if you communicate in your environment, you can handle it better. And if you don't communicate at all, you don't handle it at all, and you just get worse. Now, when the auditor moves in on it, and this fellow has never been able to pass a driving test in his life, and the auditor says, touch that car and withdraw from that car, and so on, and he puts him through a familiarization of just a touch assist on a car, the fellow goes out and passes his driving test. Oh, that's very convincing. That's very convincing. He finds out all kinds of wild things happen with such a basic and fundamental thing as a touch assist. He's now being brought up right. He can now see the gains and so forth. So that your first wins on dissemination and teaching Scientology do not naturally have to follow a perfect line. It can be a pretty wobbly line, and you can still get them along it. But when it comes to that auditing line, that, if it is wobbly, will sink him. In other words, our first touchy operation that we've really got to know our business on is auditing. And that doesn't matter whether you're auditing a little child, or you're auditing a dog, or you're auditing somebody on very upstage processes. It doesn't matter. That auditing has got to be good. It's got to contain its auditing cycle. It's got to be addressed to the general condition of the person whom you're auditing. The questions have to be understood and acceptable to the person you are auditing. These conditions have got to be straight, and you've got to be able to do a good job. So, that although it's very important to move the person in toward auditing, remember that when you've moved him in toward auditing, then we are now in a position where technology is technology with an exclamation point. Up to that time, it's debatable. It's debatable what is the best way to disseminate Scientology, because you're disseminating into such a confusion. Life as it exists. It's also debatable what's the best thing to lecture to people about Scientology. See, that's also debatable. Now, it's a little less debatable, but it's still debatable, and we can have lots of opinions on this. Do you see? The only common denominator we have when we tell them about communication, that sort of thing, people seem in general to be happy with this. But that's still subject to a number of questions. See? And we can debate on this and find out this system is better, that system is better. What you tell students when they first come in to Scientology should be, and then we can have opinions on it, and we've had personal experiences. You get the idea. But when we move it into tech, we are no longer in a debatable sphere. That is such a highly sophisticated, highly developed technology that it works only if it is right along the line 1, 2, 3, 4. You see that? So we move out of the debatability of life into the precision of auditing. And auditing is very precise. Now, when we say technology is out, although we might also include that we have instructors who refuse to let students study bulletins or something like this, technology would be out, you see, if the instructor was never in the classroom and wouldn't give the students any bulletins and refused to teach them anything, we would say that it was out. But anybody would see that it was out. Do you understand? Anybody could see that fellow wasn't teaching Scientology and so forth. Well, that's easy to see. Ah, but auditing, the ability to observe auditing and tell whether or not it is good or bad, is far, far more precise. That is much harder to do. We can observe whether the teaching is right or wrong. That's easy. But to observe whether the auditing is right or wrong, that's much harder to do. In the first place, the auditor can make little tiny mistakes, little microscopic mistakes that sufficiently upset the preclear, that the preclear then acts up, and the casual observer would then say that is simply a difficult preclear. Do you follow? Or as a matter of fact, the auditor goofed somewhere. You have to be a very, very good auditor to be able to perceive good and bad auditing. Now, in the earlier days, particularly the newer students on course, would be observed to miss on TV demonstrations the most horrible auditing goofs you ever heard of. You would ask them for an analysis of the session they have just seen. And the new student, being relatively unfamiliar with the subject of auditing, he wouldn't be able to find any. And quite uniformly, he would say the best session there was the one that had the most goofs in it. I'll give you an example. He sees the auditor sitting there, and the PC is a little bit critical, and the auditor, with soothing syrup, sort of butters the PC down, and the PC subsides, you see. And they say, wasn't that a wonderful job of auditing? And they're absolutely amazed when the supervisor would say, well, that guy's flunked, get him back to unit so-and-so and get him trained. And the new student says, get him back to unit so-and-so. Absolute genius! Look at the fellow. He just said, now, that's all right, or we'll take that up later. But the idea is, they weren't educated enough in to see whether it was goofed. Now, frankly, almost any auditing is better than no auditing. So, therefore, what you're bargaining for is only about 60 or 70% of the gains of auditing. You'd get 30 or 40% of the gains of auditing, you see, if it was all goofed up. Just by duplicated question and somebody being interested in the fellow, you're going to get some gain. But how about getting real gains out of this? Well, when we say out-tech, which is what this lecture concerns, when we say out-tech, we don't mean, in actual fact, that some auditor isn't sitting there interestedly auditing the PC. We really don't mean that. It's not as corny as what's out-supervision, so you're out-instruction. We mean that they're just not getting that 60% of the gains. Say they're settling for 20, 30, 40% of the gain and letting it go at that. We mean tech is out because they are not getting out of auditing what they should be getting out of auditing on a 100% basis. Do you follow? This, in other words, is the niceties of the thing are not with it. So that we can have an HGC, which is auditing with mad enthusiasm. PCs are coming in, and they're being audited, and they're being terrible, and all this. And this is all going on, and we say, goodness, isn't that a busy HGC, and the auditors are seldom late for auditing sessions and that sort of thing. And whenever PCs blow, they get them right back to ethics, really snapping pop, see? And we say, tech is out. Somebody say, but that's impossible! Oh, no, that's not impossible at all. They're just only getting 20 or 30% of what they ought to be getting. Why? It is simply and entirely and completely a matter of the fine points of auditing are missing, and what really goes wrong with cases is not understood. They're sitting there giving the auditing command, yes, but making lots of goofs with it, yes. Now, what does it take to make a good auditor? Now, a fellow who is a good auditor is so far above somebody who can audit that it would take an expert in actual fact to differentiate the difference. In other words, you'd have to be an awfully good auditor to watch the difference and watch what he's doing. You'd also have to be something of a case supervisor. You'd have to know these various phenomena. So a good auditor is what it takes to get good results. What's a good auditor? Well, let's take up here the first part of this, the GAEs. Now, you've heard of the GAE a long time, and this has not really, to any great degree, been published. It's not really been published the way it could have been published. These are the five GAEs, and there are only really five GAEs. Really only five. Can't handle and read the E-meter. Gross auditing error, GAE. Auditor's sitting there, he's got a meter in front of him, he's got a PC connected to the meter, he's getting blowdowns, he's getting this and that, and he falls occur, but he doesn't see these falls. Do you understand? He's getting tone arm action, but he never adjusts the tone arm so as to be able to record or note the action. You got the idea. Or when he brings his tone arm back to set and so forth, he overcompensates so the PC is getting 435 divisions of TA for 2.5 hours. In other words, he just goofed up on this subject about the E-meter. That needle moves, he doesn't see it. That tone arm moves, he doesn't see it. The needle doesn't move at all, and he sees it move. This type of error, big errors. Now, it'd take a fellow who could run an E-meter in order to detect whether or not somebody was running an E-meter, right? Or a man can look terribly competent. You know, I see a lot of these medical instruments, and I see these fellows around in white coats and lead aprons. Although I'd use a lead apron, I wouldn't know. But here are these fellows, and they're all duded up, and they're reading meters and dials and turning them on and off. Honest, some of their machines cover the wall. And when they're all finished reading that and looking so scientific and so forth, they don't know anything about the person whatsoever. And an E-meter could have found it out a long time earlier without any white coats and without a whole wall. It doesn't then matter the pose with which you handle an E-meter or the attitude with which you handle the E-meter. The E-meter just reads, do you see it read? You see, it doesn't read, do you see that it doesn't read? I mean, it's elementary. When you adjust the tone arm, well, have you adjusted it? Or have you over-adjusted it or not adjusted it, you know? That's it. Now, let me show you. Every time you see an auditing session break down, one of these GAEs is going to be out. One of them is going to be out, man. And don't go looking for whether or not he was worried about his girlfriend while he was giving the session as the reason for giving a lousy session. It's never that. It's always a gross auditing error. It's always a big one. So out tech, when it comes down to research on out tech, if you go around looking for specks of dust on the session, you're going to be wrong. What you want is a boulder. And there are only five boulders, and one of these boulders is going to be in that session. I assure you, there is one place where the case supervisor very often takes his finger off of his number. He forgets these GAEs, and he thinks it's something about the PC, or it's something about the process, or it's something about this, or something about that. And if that case supervisor went right down to it and looked real hard, he would find in that session one of these GAEs. Well, we've covered the meter one. Let's get the next one. Doesn't know and apply technical data. Now, actually, the original writing of that was, couldn't read and apply an HCOB. That's a gross auditing error. That also comes to the case supervisor. The case supervisor says, give the person an assessment for any present time problem. And this auditor who has this as a gross auditing error, you'll find out is rather consistent with this person, will simply say to the PC, you got any problems? And then write assessment negative. You see, you gave one instruction and some other action resulted. Well, it's a gross auditing error not to be able to read and apply auditing directions or a bulletin or something. You should be able to read it and apply it. It isn't necessary that you have to do that one, but don't do something else and think you've done that one. You see, that's the gross auditing error, really. The ability to read and apply data, that's all. Now, that actually moves into the zone. The next gross auditing error. The next gross auditing error is can't get or keep a PC in session. Well, you would just be amazed how often that is the case. The PC is flying all around the place and saying, oh, well, I terribly worry. You know, I have an appointment with Bill this afternoon, and I want to make sure that I've gone and the auditor says, here's the next auditing question. Yeah, well, I hope I make the appointment with Bill, all right. The auditor says, well, here's the next question. Do birds rap? And the PC says, the birds rap. I think, yeah, well, I don't know about that. But I do want to get out there in time to catch Bill when he drives by. Well, all right. Now, do birds rap? You see, that can be so gross that the auditor doesn't even see if the PC is totally out of session. PC isn't with it. Well, now, getting and keeping a PC in session is a little body of technology in itself. Part of the communication form is you've got to get somebody's attention. Okay, you've got to get somebody's attention before you can tell them something. Well, if the PC's attention is flying all over the mess universe, how are you going to get his attention long enough to get in an auditing command? So what you ought to do is try to find where his attention is going to. It actually doesn't matter much how you do it. Don't do it on an endless ITSA. But where is this guy? What's he thinking about? Well, naturally, there's only a few things that he could be thinking about. He could be ARC broken, or he could have a present time problem, or he's got a withhold. He's got an overt. I'll take those up in a minute. But the auditor who can't get the PC in session and keep the PC in session and so forth is actually committing a gross auditing error. Because he's sitting there applying a process to a nobody and a nothing. He hasn't got any PC to audit. Now, the ne plus ultra of this is, of course, down in silliness. These are all pretty gross, but this can get that silly that he just didn't tell the PC to come to session, didn't have a PC in session, and didn't himself appear. And you'll be very surprised to find out how often that was the source of no gain for your PC. You'd just be amazed. I know you say, well, such writers, that can't possibly exist. The devil they can't, man. We had somebody around here who was just having an awful time a few weeks ago, and the HCR exec second, area second, ethics officer about to shoot this person down in flames. We're just raising the devil all over the place. And I heard about this, and I said, you wait a minute. See, I know my auditing. I said, there's something else here. You better look at that just a little bit further, a little bit further. And they looked, and I'll be a son of a gun. That PC had been ended and wasn't audited for 5 consecutive days, although a top priority PC. Gross auditing error. Didn't audit the PC, much less just didn't get the PC in session. You follow me? So at the bottom of all of this stew and stir was, sure enough, one of these GAEs. Do you understand? PC wasn't being audited. Of course the PC was upset. PC paid for auditing, wasn't getting audited. Obvious. Auditor never appeared in session. PC's name never appeared on the assignment board. You got the idea? So a gross auditing error, don't you go looking for dust motes. Now, can't get the PC in session and keep the PC in session? Well, that is very broadly stated and purposely so. because there are innumerable ways to keep a PC out of session, such as locking the door. Other ways, the PC comes right into session, sits right in the chair, is totally in session, says, I've got the answer to that all night long, I've had the answer to that next question, and I've got it, and so forth, and I had a terrific cognition on it, and the auditor says, well, we'll have to go over the rudiments first. So part of this could be the PC is right there in session madly, you see, and the auditor carefully picks him up with the scruff of the neck and moves him right out. We'll have to find out if there's some reason you can't go into session before we audit you. I'm making jokes here, but honestly, these things occur. And that's a gross auditing error, and that's gross auditing error number three. All right, now gross auditing error number four is can't complete an auditing cycle. The auditor simply can't complete an auditing cycle. Now, it's quite remarkable that all the obsessive itsa you see lay right here in this number four. You know, the PC just talked and talked and talked and talked and talked and talked and talked. And you couldn't get a question in sideways? What's wrong with that PC? Well, in life or in auditing sessions, he has been prematurely acknowledged so often that he feels he's never been acknowledged. Premature acknowledgement. Fellow says, maybe to his mother, you know, habitually, I've got a brilliant idea. And his mother says, that's very good. Or instead of acknowledging, they argue. Are you sure you have answered the question I asked you? I asked you, do birds fly? And you said, when they had wings. Now, are you sure that that is an answer to the question I asked you? In other words, he stops the roll of the auditing cycle. Well, believe me, there are literally hundreds of ways you can stop an auditing cycle from completing. One of the ways is not starting one. I've had this happen to me in the early days of auditing. I'd answered the auditing demand, and the auditor simply sat there and said nothing. Literally, factually true. 20 minutes. I don't even know to this day whether or not it was the auditor couldn't think of the next auditing demand. You got that? That was all. There'll be something wrong with that auditing cycle. And that's a gross auditing error to have something goofed up about your auditing cycle. Now you can get your auditing cycle better and better and better. But there is a point when it is a passable auditing cycle, and that is you ask the question, the PC answers it, and you say, cheers, you know. If you can do that, why, from there on, it really isn't a gross auditing error. It simply needs refinement and polish. No, a gross auditing error, when you come down on it, there's number four, gross auditing error, can't complete an auditing cycle. It will be something utterly mad if it's really getting in the road of the session. It will be completely gruesome if the auditor never asks the auditing question. Just Q's and A's with every answer. The PC says, well, I think my mother, you know, answer the auditing question, who did you know, you know, I think my mother. What about your mother? Oh, well, she had bunions. What about bunions? Where's this session going? It's going to go over the hills and get lost completely. Started one auditing cycle, never finished it off, never did anything with it. Never repeated it. You got it? No, if you're ever case supervising and you suddenly detect that your PC... He could only get in one auditing question in a 2.5-hour session. What's this? It must have been that he prematurely acknowledged it, or he must have told the PC not to say it, or the PC is stark staring crazy and has been audited by somebody who only prematurely acknowledged. There's something very wrong here. And you've got to handle it, man. You've got to handle it.
auditing sessions will not progress because there's a gross auditing error present here of some kind or another. And somebody couldn't complete an auditing cycle, that's for sure. And the auditor, for sure, isn't handling the facts so that he can. You understand? Even on this basis, you say, do fish swim? Some actual process, you see? And the PC says, oh, well. Now, when you bring up something like that, that brings to mind a time when I was taking ichthyology in the University of Glasgow and so forth, and I had a professor who had bugs in his skull, and we used to have to get flit guns in the middle class and blow them in his ear. An auditor who listens to that very long without spotting something is an error and he's unable to finish his auditing cycle, and who doesn't do anything about it, has not even become aware that he should finish an auditing cycle. You see? So it's a gross auditing error in just not knowing he should finish an auditing cycle. Do you follow? You've seen PCs wander on and on and on. They're the very low-level guys in a staggery frame of mind out in life. You get a hold of them, you start asking repetitive questions. Psychologists are the real howl. A psychologist is certain that an auditing question is disposed of by being answered once. And it's really crazy auditing those boys. They have given you the answer. You talk about a fixated subject. Every question has one answer. Oh, brother. So, of course, they never discovered repetitive auditing. All right, that's number four. Can't complete an auditing cycle. Now, number five is can't complete a repetitive auditing cycle. And that's a GAE, completely aside from an auditing cycle. How about a repetitive auditing cycle? And you'd just be amazed at the trouble we had in early days of getting somebody to at least say, do fish swim a second time? And by the time they had been duplicating for about three or four consecutive questions with somebody holding a pistol on them, their head began to burst and they started falling apart at the seams. It was asking too much that they repeat the auditing question. All sorts of shifts were gone to, and we eventually developed the TRs. And then we also developed OPPRO by DUPE, opening procedure by duplication, and that is simply calculated to cure somebody of this weird malady. But you should hear somebody who has just been caught and just brought in for training when he is first told to do a duplicative auditing command. He's supposed to ask this question over and over and over. Many of them get away with it, but you'll find some bird who knows the proper thing to do is vary it. Do fish swim? Have you any idea about the swimming characteristics of fish? See? Do you mind if we discuss fish? Give me a synonym for fish. He thinks he's duplicating the auditing question. In other words, these are the five GAEs. These are the five GAEs which, if committed, will dish auditing squarely and tremendously, just like that. It'll be finished. Now, when you're case supervising and you're looking over auditors, this is what you look over when you find that you're consistently having misses. You look over this one. You look over the five GAEs on the auditor. When you're case supervising, then you tell anybody responsible for training, this is what I'm trying to relay, that they had jolly well better look over the five gross auditing errors on that auditor, because that auditor isn't going along all right. The sessions weren't going along all right, so we suspect at once one of the five GAEs, if not two or three. We don't inspect the antagonism of this girl for large, ruddy-faced men. We don't examine the auditor's case. You see, we don't do this, we don't do that. All we do, and so on, and when we say, John Doak's been having a very rough time auditing his last two or three PCs, I want you to go with this auditor and find out what the score is. Now, the training officer should not then get the auditor audited. Training officer should promptly and immediately check this guy out on five GAEs. And this guy read an e-meter? You sometimes find out he's been bluffing for a long time. He's needed glasses for quite a while. But as a Scientologist, he doesn't dare wear them. He can't even see the blur of the needle. You find weird things like this. If you look for the gross error, you're going to handle the situation. But if you just look for little dust specks and dust motes and so forth, you'll never get to it. And this is the list of the gross errors. Give him a little checkout. Give him a little checkout. Say, well, let's see, last week you were studying up on assessment and so forth, and we went into assessment quite a little bit in the training classes. Here's a little examination on assessment, and the fellow can't pass any corner of it. What's the matter with him? Well, he doesn't know and apply his technical data. So now we could maybe go into his case a little bit. We could say, what would happen to you if you did apply some technical data? Is there anything wrong with applying straight data? Oh, well, there isn't. All right. Well, then what word have you misunderstood in Scientology? And that's the secret of it, and we're away. So we straighten out his vocabulary. All of a sudden, he could know and apply technical data. You understand? So we might go into it on a case basis, but only if we reach that point. There, doesn't know and apply technical data. We'd find out if he could get and keep PC in session. We'd ask him such an offhand question as, what's wrong with the PC who's critical of the auditor? Flunk. I said, Flunk, you didn't give me a chance to answer it. Gave you a second and a half to answer the questions. You ought to know that in a millisecond. You ought to know that right now. That PC's got a left hold. And nothing else.
Oh.
Well, I thought there were several other reasons. No, there aren't any other reasons. GAE. Do you see? Can't get and keep PC in session. Well, he doesn't know the various things which take a PC out of session or get a PC in session. So how the devil could he get a PC in session or keep him out of session if he didn't know what took PCs out of session or got them back into session? He couldn't do that at all, could he? So it'd be a gross auditing error on his part. He just doesn't know that little list of things, because it's not long. And if he can't complete an auditing cycle, we can tell that fast enough. All we got to do is set him up with some TRs and inspect how he does his TRs. And you'll find out maybe he can do 1, 2, and 3, or 0 all right. But when you get into 4, every time he hits origin, no matter how you run origin, complicatedly or simply or anything of that sort, he'll go appetite over tin cup. On this whole basis, he can't handle the whole package altogether. The PC says something unexpected. He's thrown. Now you know what will happen. This person will Q&A with the PC because he gets thrown all the time. The PC originates, gee, the wall is covered with spiders. You know, that's... I didn't get that far in my drills. And then we go into the inability to repeat an auditing cycle. Well, one of the ways to do that is to go into any kind of a repetitive line. Does this auditor get nervous? Make him say Constantinople 50 times. Does this make him nervous? You find it will, if he can't repeat an auditing cycle. Oh, boy. He knows what happens if he's in the same place twice. You get shot. Life is dangerous. So that handles where we consider out tech, that handles what can be wrong with the auditor. And that's all that can be wrong with an auditor. And if you go and imagine a bunch of other things can be wrong with an auditor, why, that's silly, and so forth. Because even if you get to such extremities as the auditor is unable to talk at all, not having any tongue, or suddenly he can't complete an auditing cycle. You understand? He can't even start one. So you'd have to teach him how to audit by writing his commands down. Well, he can't write. All right, we'll fix him up so you teach him how to write. There's somebody around the other day, we were having to teach the English language so he could run R6. It was very interesting. I think he was unable to run it in his own native language because he'd forgotten it and he didn't know English well enough to run it in R6 and so forth. Well, the answer to that was very elementary. Learn English. So these things are resolvable. But if you don't know that those are the five gross auditing errors, then you can't resolve an auditor in his training or activities. Now let's go to the other side of this auditing team and let's take up the PC. And although this is much weightier and longer technology, and you know it's very difficult technology, the actual fact is there are only 4 things, really, that can be wrong with a PC, but we'll expand it to 6 just to be happy about the thing. We cover these in the HCLD of 13 September 1965, out of which we're speaking, But I did not put in here the five gross auditing errors, but could well have done so. I gave some other data concerning the analysis of auditors. I give you now very fundamental data on the analysis of an auditor, whether or not he can audit. He'll have one of his five gross auditing errors out. Now let's take up PC, which is very, very important, and let's find out what about the PC. Well, there can be two things wrong with the PC that immediately don't really come into the auditing session but tell whether or not the PC should be audited. And only two things, these are only two things. The PC is suppressive or the PC is a PTS. Now, in either case, you're running into heavy weather. Now, what is a suppressive? Well, a suppressive, actually, is somebody who doesn't get any case gain. And that, in actual fact, is taken up under the later one here of the continuing overts. He really doesn't get case gain because of continuing overts. Now, a suppressive is simply defined as, for your information, this is an auditor's viewpoint now, not an ethics officer's viewpoint, but a suppressive is somebody who doesn't get any case gain. And you say, well, isn't that nice? That lets you out, so you don't have to get a case gain on this file. If you don't get a case gain on this file, you just get rid of the whole thing. You don't have to do a better technical job. You just say, suppressive, ha ha! That lets us out. Well, the truth of the matter is, in my experience, it's very nearly impossible not to get a case gain. Very close to impossible not to get a case gain. You're only talking about 2.5% of the PCs, in actual fact. You'll have trouble with about 20% of the PCs because there's SPs or PTSs, but in actual fact, only about 2.5% of the total PCs running along the line. Now, this doesn't include the society as a whole, but it's certainly people who come into Scientology around Scientology. You're only handling about 2.5% of them are suppressing. Now, it doesn't mean that you didn't get a gain in the session, so therefore the fellow is suppressive. It means this fellow has been audited by this one and that and the other one, and people have really tried, and this person gets no case gain. Well, it so happens that we're good enough today to be able to say SP. What makes an SP an SP? From an auditor standpoint, he is not even vaguely really interested in what makes an SP an SP. He's just interested in the fact that you shouldn't ought to audit one and devote and dedicate your life to auditing an SP who isn't going to get case in and out. What's going to happen to this fellow? Well, I'm afraid he should have thought about that before he started going so bad. So he's still populating the universe when the rest of us aren't. What's this worry about the SP? Believe me, he never worries about you. Now, what about this boy? Well, actually, it's covered down here under 6 on the same list as I just said. He actually is committing continuing overts. Now, trying to get those continuing overts off and trying to get to the source of those continuing overts and try to move forward with any kind of a case gain on this person at all is very, very hard to do, but can be done. And the only process that will really handle a suppressive, the only series of processes are power processes, second stage release. That will handle one. Now, occasionally, a person can be over-audited so heavily and so far, particularly over-audited, let us say, in R6EW or in some very powerful process, and they've just been audited up the spout, they thereafter won't get any case gain. You have to go back and pick them up where they should have been picked up and rehabilitate where they were overrun before they get a case gain. And the funny part of it is during that period, the person's actions will be slightly suppressive. Quite interesting. Don't confuse, then, somebody who's been overrun and isn't getting any case gain the last few days. What you want is on a suppressive is he's never gotten any case gain. It doesn't ever exist. He has never had any case gain. He has never had any TA. You get the idea. That's the category. And you find out about 2.5% of the people that are around on the streets and so forth will come under that category. And he doesn't get a case gain because he continually commits little tiny overts. He is so engaged in fighting some imaginary battle in the past that he has no time to have any friends in the present. Everyone to him is an enemy. and each individual is an everyone. He is the master of generalities. The world itself around him is A equals A equals A. He's actually in a pretty mad spin, and in institutions there are only two types of people, suppressives and PTSs. There is nothing else in an institution, from top to bottom. Therefore, the poor old ruddy psychiatrist never gets a crack at anything but a suppressive or a PTS. That is why consistently I said to you, don't fool with the insane. I couldn't give you a pat explanation of why you shouldn't fool with the insane, but I told you you shouldn't. Well, that is why. You see, well, there's an insane person, he's always fighting an imaginary enemy. That's one of the biggest definitions of insanity. Or he's retreating madly from an imaginary enemy. And then in the insane asylum, you will find the PTSs that the SPs have put there. And you do anything for this person, this PTS, and of course the SP will cave him in again within 24 hours of contact. You're going to see this inevitably. You couldn't win if you had to. Here, then, is this whole subject of insanity. A case does not advance. Only six reasons a case does not advance. Number one, the PC is suppressive. All right, we could go into that. We could get the person to St. Hill and so forth. But remember, we don't have any padded cells here. We can't accommodate certain types of personnel here. We have no hospital, keepers, guards, all that sort of thing. You'd just be surprised how many people are walking around in that society out there who do need keepers and guards. It's quite interesting. There are a lot of them. And because the psychiatrist isn't any better than he is, he really can't spot his really insane people. Oh, he spots them when they finally wind up in his lap. His recognition is up to recognizing an insane person when the insane person is dropped in his lap. But going out into the society and trying to analyze who is crazy and who isn't, the psychiatrist, being a PTS professionally himself, has not actually done anything more than just give you a big generality. Everybody is crazy. You find Menninger was saying that. Well, everybody is crazy, you know. It's quite interesting. Some people are more crazy than others. He's not right at all. He's not right at all. Every once in a while, a guy gets a sensation like he's going to blow his top or going nuts. That's for sure. That if he recognizes this is a sensation, he isn't crazy, because a crazy person never finds out. A potential trouble source is simply, from an auditor's viewpoint, somebody connected to a suppressive. That's all a potential trouble source is. Don't look for any other trimmings. And from an auditor and a case supervisor's viewpoint, a PTS, potential trouble source, is always recognized as a roller coaster. That unfortunately adds another tough term to Scientology technology and vocabulary. But a roller coaster is simply just that. A person goes up and he goes down, and he goes up and he goes down, and it's just a jolly old billy all around the corners. Whoop up, oh, wee, I feel fine, oh, it's really raw, I feel. Now, the psychiatrist specialized in a type of thing called manic depressive. Maybe you remember the term. That means a guy is up and a guy is down. Manic, up, depressive, down. The manic depressive is one of the common and standard symptoms of insanity, but in some types of insanity, why, it's manifested mainly as just frozen fish, you know? The guy doesn't go up or down, and that's the suppressive. You got it? Psychiatrist is differentiated then between the manic depressive and the paranoid. The paranoid doesn't change. He's already got his types. But this manic depressive action is simply symptomatic of a person being next to an undetected suppressive. And I don't care whether he's insanely manic depressive or sanely manic depressive. He feels good today and bad tomorrow, don't you see? That's a roller coaster. Now, we particularly mean a roller coaster is he feels good after auditing and then feels bad. He leaves the session. He's terrific. His tone arm is down. Everything's going along fine. He's had some good cognitions. The somatic is gone. He walks out of that session. He comes back for the next session. And he's on the bottom. And you say, oh, I must have done something wrong. Oh, the PC must have self-audited. Oh, figure. And until you really got your wits wrapped around this important datum, you're going on figuring yourself to death about this. That person is a PTS. And then the next little bridge you're going to cover is, well, he couldn't be a PTS because he didn't meet the suppressive person between sessions. Now, you've interjected that arbitrary. Nobody else has. He didn't have to. All he had to think was, what will Jonesy think about this? You follow? Person didn't have to be present. You don't have to locate the physical presence. This suppressive is around in the environment, even though they're 10,000 miles away. Do you see? There's only one reason a person roller coasters, and that isn't because an auditor forgets to say end of session with the proper happy lilt in his voice. That person felt good on Monday, and on Tuesday came into session feeling bad. Now, an auditor can pull a couple of accidental suppressive acts, like refuse to acknowledge the PC or ARC break and make the guy feel worse. We're not talking about that sort of thing. We're talking about this pure, outright roller coaster. And there's only one thing wrong with a roller coaster, and that is he is a potential trouble source, meaning he is connected to a suppressive. I manage ethics officers around the world are learning this and unlearning it and relearning it, and all of a sudden we'll eventually sort it out and say, by God, that's true. Because every once in a while they can't find the SP. They can't find the suppressive. Why do we say potential trouble source? Because they always commit trouble. And that's the big generality that you can make about a PTS. Sooner or later, you're going to have trouble. We got one the other day. We've had one hang around the fringes for about, 5-6 months, and he wasn't convinced there was any SP, and no SP had been really located on the case and confirmed and so forth. And this person was going up to Hazy London getting audited and getting tremendous results and going down to the bottom the next week and so on. And they finally found the suppressive and got the good indicators in and straightened the person out after this long period of time. Actually, it was just really not really convincingly locating the SP in that person's line. And that's the only thing that masks it, because an SP speaks totally in generalities. An SP speaks, everybody thinks you are a heel. Like, the community believes you are a dog. You see? Men are always like that. All men are like that. This is the type of sweeping generality. And the guys are not locatable in the environment. They just sort of butter themselves all over the environment. And you try to get a case to go spot a suppressive in its vicinity. No, I haven't got any. There's nobody there. This person has spoken in generalities to such a point that he doesn't exist anymore. He's just a generality himself. He's everybody. So in Scientology these days, we know this well enough, and somebody who sails in and so forth and says, well, everybody thinks we advertise too much, at HCLSEC will inevitably say, what is everybody's name, or who is everybody? The person will think for a moment, well, his name's Sweeney. And good indicators will come in. Now, if you audit this person, you're just setting this person up. And if you audit this person to a tremendously successful gain, you may get him killed. I'd say that advisedly, just shot down in his tracks. Let's say you really pull the technology out, and boy, you really did a bang-up job of audit, and man, you really cleaned up this case. And this case was just sailing. Of course, you couldn't get the case up to clear, which is where you'd had to take the case. You sent the case home. The end of the intensive, and the person is really walking on air. One of two things will happen. This has happened. The SP has committed suicide. Bang, just like that. Or the SP just walks out in the kitchen and pours the arsenic into the coffee, because they can't have anybody better. They're having enough trouble killing them while they're sick. Do you see that? You really can walk a PTS right straight into it, man. Maybe it's not that dramatic, but it will be that gruesome. So you really shouldn't audit an SP or a PTS. Actually, here at St. Hill, we really shouldn't take on SPs. We can do so because we're insouciant. That's a word you can look up afterwards. But there we are. There's the two things now. And one of these days, you will suddenly come up with a tremendously important datum, explanation point, that, my God, Ron's right. A person rolling coasters only because he's connected to a suppressive person. And you jolly well better not audit them. And most of the trouble we've had has come from PTSs. Actually, not from SPs, but PTSs. SPs have incited it all, but the trouble has been made by the PTS. Quite fascinating. You see, the trouble is made by the PTS becoming better. And then the SP gets desperate and makes all kinds of trouble. Do you get the idea? So the source of the trouble is our auditing a PTS. We wouldn't get any trouble auditing the SP because he wouldn't go any place anyhow. All he'd do is smile, so forth, make an auditor a bit unhappy and miserable. He won't do anything like when you audit a PTS. And it's very discouraging to an auditor. This guy was fine on Monday, collapses on Friday. The auditor's absolutely certain he has done something wrong. He hadn't done anything wrong except audit a PTS. He audited a potential trouble source and didn't recognize it. There was another earlier roller coaster. This is one of the things a case supervisor on PCs has to be